most people think of liberation, if they even think of liberation, as being liberated from something or to something. But liberation is a state of being. It's the one thing that Buddha wanted, was to be liberated, to be free. And he gave his entire life to the pursuit of liberation. And many of us have an abstract idea that we also want to be liberated. But mostly it's from or to. We want to be liberated from our suffering, from our addictions, needs, fears, doubts. Or we want to be liberated to peace, bliss, joy, ecstasy, the Absolute. And every one of us who has a longing for it has a longing in some variable of hunger. For some it's a curiosity. For some it's like, I would kind of like to be liberated. Would be nice. And then there are some for whom it's everything. So what starts the journey to liberation? Well, my understanding of it is a kind of initiation. We need to be initiated at some point from our embrace of life as being exactly what it appears to be to most of us when we're children. Life appears to be getting up in the morning, having breakfast, maybe going to school, dealing with your teachers, dealing with your friends, coming home, fighting about doing homework, wanting to watch TV, fighting about going to bed, getting up. You get the picture. That's what most of us think of life as. A kind of constant repetition moving towards something. What is it moving toward? It's kind of moving toward whatever you were led to believe it would be important. A good job, a good marriage, children, some vacations, happiness. You know, whatever it is you kind of program in or have been programmed to think it is all about. And then, for some people, something happens that shatters the predictable idea of life. Something happens that cuts into it. And it's a personal initiation. In my generation, there was the drugs, LSD, psilocybin, mescaline, all of these different things that people could take that suddenly took all of the believability in the solidity of life and transformed it into something very different. In fact, these drugs have been around from time immemorial, and people have been taking them for centuries. They do something to the conscious mind that says, this is not what it appears to be. Some people tried austerities. They tried to do different things to say, what is this world that we're in? What is it like? What is it really underneath the underpinnings of the illusion or the seeming drama of life? And they tried all sorts of things to find it. And some people had a glimmer, or even an awakening, to the fact of this is not what it appears to be. There's something bigger going on. Some people just have suffering, enormous suffering, that takes them to a place of such depth that something opens inside them and says, it's okay. The world is not what you think it is. Whatever it may be, whatever is the initiation point for your search, for your pursuit of truth or liberation, something leads you to ultimately find a teacher or a teaching that begins to explain it to you, that helps you get there. The old adage is the teacher appears when you're ready. This idea of being ready means that you're real in your pursuit, that this isn't just a kind of curiosity, it really is like life or death. If it's a curiosity, you'll find the teacher who addresses curiosity. You'll get the teacher you deserve, basically. You know, in shamanic circles, a lot of people want to know what this is so that they can have mastery over it. And that's something that occurs. You can actually begin to see the future, read minds, have powers. And for a lot of ego-minded people, they'll find teachers who will make that possible. It takes a lot of training, but you can do stuff like that. Then there are people who want to go deeper, who really want to go deeper. You kind of find out who it is that you are. You know, something in you tells you, okay, I'm ready to settle. I'll take fame. I'll take money. I'll take security. I'll take peace and comfort. But something in you knows that's not the ultimate truth, and something in you knows that's not the source of liberation. That it's deeper and it's harder. It takes a total commitment. So, somewhere along the line, I decided this is what I wanted. You know, most of you know my story, and I don't need to elaborate at all, but somewhere in the LSD trip in the 1960s, the universe exploded, and I was completely made aware of its illusory aspect. I was made aware of my own egotism and how it controlled, in a sense, my hunger to be in the world, to be in the illusion of Mara, or Maya, depending upon your choice of words. But my explosion was so big that I had no choice but to get to the source of it, what's going on. And the journey led me to Rudy. Rudy taught me how to work, how to find the power and the strength to keep breaking through and breaking through and breaking through my own bullshit. And it was an extraordinary, thing to learn. And then I kept discovering that as much as I would break through, I wasn't there. I hadn't arrived at this liberation. In my own mind, I had a concept of liberation. We all have a concept of liberation. I hadn't gotten there. And then, continuing the story, about 3 years ago, I was sitting at a gathering of awakened souls, and something remarkable occurred. Bruce. Everything I knew about Bruce fell away. It just wasn't there. And I'd never anticipated that. I anticipated Bruce would be awake. Bruce would have something. And what they did is took Bruce away, and there was just awakening of not of a person, but just awakening itself. Just clarity. Just presence. And it was beyond remarkable and joyous and free and everything that had been in the pursuit, except that there was no Bruce to own it, enjoy it, or sell a book about it. However, shortly after that number of months, this thing that my friend Paul Ederman said, he said, Brucing began. Brucing was, for me, the beginning of parts of Bruce re-establishing themselves, or the parts that were not fully done with presenting themselves. One way or another, there was still some Bruce going on. And I was able, in many cases, to sit there and watch that. And what would take place is I would watch this Brucing happen, and Bruce would feel overly observed, very ashamed of its being, and it would go, and there would still be this remarkable presence with no Bruce. And then one night, I've described all this to you before, this darkness occurred, this deep, dark, terrifying presence. And I had known that before in my life. I'd known it was there, and I was always horrified of it. Everyone I know who's ever seen this thing is pretty terrified of it. But for the first time in my life, rather than cower under the sheets, which is a common response, I just started singing to it. So you all know I started singing Simon and Garfunkel. And this darkness was very, very surprised to be acknowledged, and very surprised to be sung to. And it became very docile. And I felt, huh, I have found some kind of peace with my own darkness. And so I very casually, and I thought consciously, invited it into my life. I said, come up out of the basement, come into the kitchen, share my life. And it said, sure. Be careful when you invite a tiger into your home. Because as sweet as it may be when you pet it at one point, it has a tendency to want to attack or do what it does naturally. I'll tell you what the tiger wants to do, but this is more a tale not of tigers, but of Shiva. And Shiva, the darkness, this dark force, has one particular goal, which is to destroy you, to rip you apart piece by piece, to absolutely dismantle and dismember every part of your ego mind, every part. And when I welcomed it into the house, and into my room, into the kitchen, which is really what I thought, I didn't know it would be in the bedroom, I didn't know it would be everywhere. But in it came, and it set to work very quickly, very quickly. This is the lineage as I see it. Trust me, as a narrator and a storyteller, I may be just making it up, but this is how it felt. The first thing it did was, that I was conscious of, was to rip my career apart. I had already let go of my career as a writer. I no longer cared about it. I didn't care about very much of my spiritual life, any identity. I was pretty free of identity, I thought. But what was still going on in my life was that I had a musical opening on Broadway, and it seemed to have as a potential the opportunity to give me a very cushy life. And the night that all the critics came, we had the one and only total breakdown of the set during the performance, and for 25 minutes the show shut down with all of the New York critics sitting in the auditorium. And I was in the back of the auditorium, and everyone gathered, all the production people, and we all stood there like for 500 hours and felt this thing happening. And it was the most unpleasant, horrible experience. The director, who hadn't been there, ran over, and he was like, I never saw him beside himself with grief. And I knew what was happening. I knew that my life was being completely changed in that moment. And I knew when I went home that night, I would wake up in the middle of the night and the darkness would wake me up, this dark force, and kind of laugh at me. And I was prepared for it. And at 4 a.m., I woke up. And I thought that's what would be there, but there was something else present. And a voice came to me, and it was very subtle and very quiet and very simple. And it said, in reference to what had just happened that night, this was God at work. And I said, thank you. And that's when I understood that the darkness in me was Shiva. Shiva the destroyer. And that it had a purpose that I had allowed it entry. And that purpose was destroy every piece of this thing that's separate from it, from oneness. And that's all of the leftover detritus of the Bruce personality, of the Bruce life, and everything else that that entails, which goes way back. And it was doing its work. The show opened, as you know, the critics lambasted the show, hated it, all talked about the fact that the scenery broke down in the show. And I kind of knew this would happen. And then the show, with bad reviews, couldn't make money, so it fell by the wayside. A show that was going to happen in Amsterdam fell by the wayside. And in my mind, it was over. It was completely over. It was devastating. Devastating. And from a spiritual perspective, essential. And I would teach through all of this, and I have to say, every Sunday as I taught, the clarity of what was going on was greater and greater and greater. I began to see very quickly that the loss of the show was going to unravel a lot more than the show. And the first thing that came to mind was that any income that I had imagined from that show would not be available. And I had, you know, two very big houses and would not be able to live on a fixed income in two very big houses. And the one that seemed the most reasonable to let go of was this house, the New York house, which was for me a kind of paradise. But Blanche and I talked about it, and we decided we will put this on the market. And as you all know, the house was on the market for a year, and a buyer came not that long ago and wanted it. And 4 days ago, 5 days ago, we signed the contract that sold the house. Before I sold it, I began to go into these horrible states of hearing a voice saying, this is the biggest mistake of your life. Do not sell this house. And as I've talked about in classes, I tried to trace that voice back and traced it back to this 8-year-old self of mine that desperately wanted the safety of of achievement, the safety of attainment, to protect me and to house me, and that this house represented all of this attainment. It represented my image, if you will, in the world. And it was now an image that was being dismantled, and I desperately wanted it not to go away. And so, discovering this little kid who's really holding on to this thing that it in some way spent a lifetime constructing, I've tried to celebrate this child and I've tried to comfort this child. And this child, in a sense, is part of the dark force, because it's yelling at me. It's yelling and yelling, don't do this, don't do this. Essentially, I'm going to die. I'm going to be destroyed. You are annihilating me. And I really want to pay attention to this kid, and I really want to serve him, but I knew this was the wrong thing, and I had to let go. And so, this past week, Blanche and I went over to see the lawyer, actually just to deliver some papers. And she wasn't even supposed to be there. We were just going to have something notarized and leave. But she was there, and she said, well, you're here. Why don't we go over the contracts? And we went over the contracts, and at the end of the contracts are these little stickers that were signatures. And she said, you know, you might as well, if you want, sign. She says, is there any reason you wouldn't want to sign? And Blanche said, Bruce has a lot of reasons not to want to sign. And then she went, do you not want to sell your house? She said, you shouldn't sell your house if you don't want to sell your house. You shouldn't do this. And then began to tell me her story, because she was in exactly the same position of just selling a house now that her husband and she said they can no longer keep going, because they have two houses. They have a house in the city and a house in the country. And the house in the country is where all the kids grew up, and she had an enormous emotional attachment, but they realized they don't need it anymore, nor can they afford it. So she gave me this moment to look back with enormous compassion as she stared at me and say, what do I want to do here? And I had thought I'd have a few more days, and I thought I could really power through and figure out how to handle this sale. What, you know, I could back out, I could back out, I could back out, and the voices were still telling me I could back out. But I suddenly felt my mother's presence. This is kind of interesting. When I was a kid and I was getting my driver's license, I was really afraid that I was going to fail the driver's test, and I kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And my mother took me driving on a test drive, and she took me in, turn here, do this, do that, and I finally ended up, I'm right in front of a police station. And she said, go in. I said, what? She said, you're here, you might as well get your driver's license. I said, oh, no, 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 but she said, you're here. And I said, oh, okay. And I went in, the policeman came with me, got in the car, started driving. I made a few mistakes, I thought maybe I wouldn't get my license. He said, do you want to buy some tickets to the policeman's ball? Or raffle or something, I don't know, but I said, I'll buy them all. I'll buy whatever you want me to buy. And essentially I bought my driver's license, and I became a driver, and I could feel suddenly sitting in this room with the lawyer unexpectedly with a contract in front of me sooner than I wanted it to be, that this was the moment, and I had been led to it quite unknowingly. And I felt, because of this woman and her compassion, because of my mother's presence, I felt really at ease. And I just said, okay. And so I signed the contracts, and Blanche signed the contracts, and I had pictures taken of us in this moment, and I felt, it's done. It's done. I can walk away from all of the drama. I can walk away from all of the doubt. I'm finished. We drove home, and we both felt sort of sad, but complete. And I woke up the next morning, and I will tell you every morning since, this is the biggest mistake you have ever made, and there is nothing you can do about it. You've done it. This is it. You have completely destroyed your life, your future. You've let go of paradise. You've made the stupidest mistake imaginable. It just really came on, and it came on with such power that I could barely breathe. And I'm going, what kind of awakening did I have that allows this much attachment, this much pain, this much self-doubt? What is there any truth to anything that took place for me? And what came to me was Buddha sitting under the Bo tree, saying finally to the universe, I'm staying here until I get it, until you free me. I'm taking it out. Whatever it is you throw at me, I'm going to be here until I know the truth, until I am liberated into what is real. And I felt I am experiencing Maya, Mara. I'm experiencing the universe throwing everything it has at me. And I don't even believe this is everything. I know they're not done. But they are ripping me to shreds, ripping this Bruce thing to shreds. And they're not doing it because I'm evil or a bad person or they hate me or anything like that. They're doing it because there's only one thing I want in my life, and that's liberation. And as much as I may have thought that I had attained awakening or that awakening had happened, and attained or not attained, as much as I may have believed that to be true, there was more to happen, and that's what's happening. Everything is being dismantled on some fundamental level. And I share this all with you for a lot of reasons. One is that's all I have to talk about. I'm sharing my journey with you because we're all together on a journey, and believe me, we're all on a very similar journey. I'm sharing it with you because it really is painful. It really hurts. To leave this place is the hardest thing ever, ever in my life so far. It is unbearable, and I think about it, today it finally hit me, it's not just painful for me, it's painful for all of us, because we're all losing something really kind of remarkable, really special, and I won't be here anymore. And that's really painful. It's so final. Signing that contract was so final. It's the end. It's like saying to yourself, I'm done. I've committed to whatever it is. I have to say, I am hoping that when I finally leave this world, that the universe tricks me into it in the same way that they tricked me into signing this contract, because it's the one way to get there and finally make peace with the bigness of the choice that we all have to make. It's a wonderful thing where you finally just go, I'm ready. I am ready. But it's not over when it's over. There's still this stuff you have to cut through. And you have two choices. One, for me, is to suffer and regret this choice for the rest of my days, or to understand that it's part of the freeing of a soul from attachment to a body and a mind and an ego. It takes that much. The universe has to take away everything to free you. And you don't have to let it go. You can actually wrap yourself into it and suffer and suffer and suffer if you want to. Or, given the initiation into a spiritual life, you will know there's another choice. There is another choice. And that other choice is let go. Say thank you. You know, it's the idea that they throw spears at Buddha and they turn into flowers. They are taking this really gorgeous, beautiful, paradisical space away. And yet, if I don't sit around and suffer it. What I keep experiencing is the doorway, if you will, to liberation. I literally have to make that choice every day, because I wake up in the morning before my conscious mind is able to assert itself, and I have the regret, the oh my God, what have I done moment comes, and it doesn't come lightly. It comes right in the gut, and it really hurts. And then I have to go through, there's so many processes to go through, but mostly it's to go, this is as it must be. This is what is. Open. Open. Allow. Be present. Don't live in the future and don't live in the past. Just be present. And that's where liberation is. Today when I woke up again, that same thing was there, and I just knew that I had to teach this class. You know, and it's when you're in that space, you can't imagine why or how you would be able to teach a class to anybody. What would you have to say? You feel like, you know, such a pretender. How can you teach classes about liberation and spirituality and all of that and feel this level of attachment? But that's when the illusion began to unravel. That's when Mara began to make itself known. And I just went, wow, wow, you don't play games here. This is heavy duty. And I know some of you are going through your own confrontations with these forces. And all I can tell you is be grateful that you have an understanding that the universe is working through its dismantling of you, through the loss of everything you love. It is working. There is, if you will, purpose. There is meaning. This occurs because it loves you, not because it hates you. But it is really hard. It is harder than anybody will tell you. And you have to go through it if you want this freedom. You have to stare it down, basically. You don't want to be someone who is crushed by it and sits there as a little pile of anger and hostility and unhappiness. You want to, like the phoenix, you want to rise out of those ashes. But they got to bring it down to ashes. They've got to bring you down into the dust. Because you can't rise up out of flesh. You've got to rise up out of the nothingness that you really are. So Rudy used to say, this whole journey is to arrive at nothingness. That's exactly what it is. Liberation is being nothing, no thing, no thing, free, just free. And you don't just get it because you say, oh, I really kind of want that. It just doesn't work that way. Either you are really driven and committed to this thing, or you're going to get beaten up in ways you can't even imagine, and it will be purposeless. It will make you crazy. And you don't want that. You want to find the still point, this oneness. And you want to sit there and just go, bring it on. Take it away. Do what you must do. Because it's Shiva. And Shiva is the destroyer. And Rudy became Swami Rudrananda. Rudrananda is the wild side of Shiva. Rudrananda isn't the polite, okay, we're going to take this part of you and that part of you. It's like that. And we're here. What, you guys are here because you opened to that. You even asked for it, or you wouldn't be here. So I am just someone who's going through it in a, for me, dramatic way. And I'm announcing to you that this is our ride. And you know, I'm like, you know, the guy who's two steps ahead in the cave, you know, with a little bit of a flashlight, telling you this is what it is, this is what's coming. Don't be afraid of it, it's what you asked for. And what you get from all of this is the ultimate awakening of a human being. That's what you get. You get the most important thing possible out of this. You have two choices, to get liberation or to get entrapment, to get suffering, unending suffering. It's not really unending, because the promise of all the great teachers is everybody awakens at some point. Every one of us finally gets there, but it may not be in this body or this time, but it could be in this body, in this time, if you want it, if you really want it. But what you discover, we all discover, you know, is how attached we are to not letting it change, to not letting it get pulled away. You know, this place, you know, whoever listens to this video, you know, 10 years from now, or who knows, years and years from now, will not know what this place was, but this place is really beautiful. It's really peaceful. It's really a gift of aesthetic satisfaction. It's very hard to leave. But in the teachings, Buddha left a palace. He left a kingdom, you know? And that was not the end of his journey. It was the beginning of his journey. Spiritual awakening, in my mind, is the beginning of a bigger journey. It's just, and you know, all hail to those guys who did it all completely in one flash. You know, I just haven't done it in one flash. I thought I had, but I hadn't. It's bigger than that. And Buddha, too, he sat for years trying to cut through this stuff. And then finally he just said, guys, I'm not moving. I'm not moving. Just do your worst. Do what you got to do. I'm waiting for liberation. And that's a little bit how I find myself at this moment. And I'm not trying to compare myself to Buddha or anybody else, but I'm just so grateful for those stories, because they help you to understand your story. They help you understand, excuse me, what you're going through. And so this is what we're going through. On the other side of this, just so you know some of the clarity of what happens, is I have another house. I keep forgetting I have another house. And it's actually a very beautiful house and quite wonderful. And I can go there anytime I want. It's paid for. You know? And it's there. I mean, this is what makes the story kind of crazy. And this is a really piece of information which I'm unbelievably happy about and excited about. My daughter-in-law is about to have another baby. Uh-huh. So we're, and a boy, a little boy. So now I have Talia and another, a little child. So we have, Blanche and I, an opportunity to be in Seattle where they're living and renting a house for a year to help raise and support them, raise the child and support them during this period. So it's not like, you know, darkness to darkness. There is a huge loss taking place, but there's also something wonderful on the other side. But even if there weren't, even if there weren't, even if it was just the loss of everything, welcome to the unknown, that's the truest state a human being can enter. It's the place we actually all live. Being asked to get rid of, to leave everything behind, doesn't end anything. It just opens you to the next unknown. And the less baggage you have, Blanche and I are still working on less baggage, the less baggage you have, the freer you are. So, again, I'm sharing all this because, what else do I have to teach? This is the ride. I think we're all going to be in various places where you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And all I can tell you is hold on to your practice, or immerse yourself in your practice, because holding seems to represent the wrong thing. But immerse yourself in the still point of being. Say, thy will be done, and let Shiva do its work. And when it really hurts in the morning, sit still, touch the earth or the bed, feel grounded, feel real, feel grateful. Call me, you know, or call someone you love and just say, love me, you know, give me a hug. Whatever it is, do the thing you need to do, and you will pass through that moment. Buddha just sat there. I really admire that. I get that. But some of us, this goes on for longer than you can sit there. So you just have to be willing, just be willing to ride through the weeks, months, or years that it takes to free you. And just be consistent, be real, be honest with yourself. Speak to the dark side. Say, I know, I understand what you're doing. I get the process. I don't like it, but I get it. I would much rather Ghost had been the biggest hit on Broadway. But if liberation is the result of it not being a big hit, it was worth the price. Same with selling this place. It's worth it. It's all worth it. Letting go of everything is worth it. Because what you end up with is yourself, the true, infinite, vibrant, essential, eternal self. You can't give up enough to get it. It's worth it. Any questions, George?
Just a couple of metaphors that come to mind. You know, like the, I guess it's from also letting go is hard to do, or that's one of them. Other things like when you jump off a diving board and you let it go, sometimes you get a belly flop and it really hurts, and sometimes you train yourself to do it well.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
And the other thing was, Rudy always said, you get in life exactly what you're going to pay the price. Price for it again, and a lot of people aren't willing to pay that price.
Well, I mean, that's the whole secret. I mean, a lot of people want something, but they don't want it enough. And you can't get something if you don't want it enough. And they give you an opportunity to pay all of that, and you have a choice. You can say anything but that. Of course, that's what they're going to go for, because that's what frees you.
Thank you for sharing that, but also thank you for sharing this whole universe with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to have someone to share it with, because sharing it just with yourself doesn't seem quite enough on some level. And on another level, you are myself, and I am yourself, and we are one thing learning together, and we are a very lucky entity. Because I went to dinner with some friends last night, they weren't talking about this.
I just wanted to thank you for being so authentic with us. Very helpful, very grounding. It helps me to connect my own stories to the path. I think that's how it works.
I mean, I think if you sit and talk abstraction, people can go, yeah, but it doesn't make sense.
Right.
I mean, that's why we have stories, and that's why I'm a storyteller. And it's really, I think I'm trying to make sense of it too through the story, because, you know, when I wake up in the morning and the pain is there, if I don't have a story with it, it's just pain. Mm-hmm. And the story turns it into something that makes sense. For all I know, it's just stories. I mean,
it's
Buddha.
Transformation.
It is transformation. It is.
But I also wanted to comment that destruction, the other side of destruction, is creation.
So absolutely.
You can't create unless there's destruction.
Right. But that's.
Shiva Shakti.
That's the whole idea. I mean, you know, the Hindu theology is, you know, there's Brahma the creator, there's Vishnu the preserver,
right,
and there's Shiva the destroyer, and they all have to work together. And that's we're all part of that. We are that, in fact. We are those very forces. I mean, I know from my initiatory experience and through lots of other experiences along the way that I am the totality. But tell that to Bruce. You know, and when Bruce disappeared, that was really beautiful, because that was all there was, the totality. And then this thing comes back. George and Cheryl gave me a statue many years ago of a dancing Ganesh, but in Shiva form. And it's dancing with all of its arms, and it's in total control of the universe. It's this massive, gorgeous kind of awareness and presence. And at the very bottom of it is a mouse biting on its toe. It has to be there. There has to be this little thing, annoying and annoying and annoying, and it really gets your attention. And if you really want to have your attention got, and this is going to happen to everybody, in your pristine, perfect Buddha state, you're going to die and it's going to hurt. And there's going to be some kind of pain at some point. That's that mouse. And that little mouse at that point will fill your attention. The whole rest of the universe will disappear, and your pain will take over. It's how it works. And at that point, you need the yin-yang to balance it out. And that takes a lifetime of training. And you can finally go, well, basically what you do is you just be in the pain. Because you don't really have a choice. But it will be, if you have a story in place, it will be something that you can let happen. And that's really powerful. And at some point, the pain will be gone and it will be over. I refer a lot to the Christ story because the agony on the cross is exactly about that. He lost it. He completely lost it on the cross. You know, and so would I, and I suspect so would you. But then somewhere in all of that, he found it again. He said, forgive them. That's the moment where you find it again, where you have separation and you recall who you are. That's what we are all working for.
You know, every time you make a choice, right? It's the noble choice, it's always right.
Well, I have to tell you...
You look back and you go, it was absolutely the right decision.
I haven't gotten that clarity. I actually don't know whether the voice saying you're making a mistake is a higher voice or a lower voice. I have not been able to truly figure that out, but I know I had to make a choice, and the rational mind choice was, this place is way too expensive, I have grandchildren, I mean, I have all these things pulling me away, but the deep, deep gut level choice was, trust the universe and stay here, it'll all work out. How do you know which is which? And I could not figure it out. All I know is that once I made my choice, this deep, ugly, persistent, you made a mistake thing came at me, and I know the sound of that voice. The sound of that voice is the voice of the dark side. I know it is. I know it is. But it comes at you with such truth and such vibrancy that you mistake it often for the other side. And it's all part of one thing, but it's tempting you into being a failure, it's tempting you into being self-doubting and self-hating, all that stuff. And that's, in my mind, at least today when I woke up and it was, you know, Arkady and Yelena were here and we were talking and Bob came over, it was so clear to me that what was really going on was Mara. This is how illusion works. This is how darkness seduces you into feeling you did the wrong thing. And that's been very hard for me to come to arrive at, because it has such authority. It's so clear. And I started thinking, my God, what Buddha must have gone through sitting under that bow tree. It's not spears. It's everything that means anything to you, and there's no clarity at all. You just have to go, it can't be true. It can't be true. This seduction, this terror, it can't be true. There's something else happening. And sitting through that, trusting, 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 that's what we have to do. And how do you get to that place? How do you arrive at a place that trusts the ability to do that? It's a life's work. It's taken me, 50 years almost of sitting to get to a place where I can actually talk like this and have some sense of maybe I'm telling the truth. You know, I'm telling my truth, but I don't know if it's the truth, but it's all I can share. And if it's a truth that works for anybody, that's great. If it doesn't work for you, then, you know, what can I say? But there are certain other teachers, Buddha among them, Christ among them, who had similar lessons. So unless we're making it all up in some interior place of our own delusion, these lessons are the things that cut through the illusion of life and give us a kind of truth to live by, a candle in the dark. And we have that little light, and we have to really keep it alive, because this thing is trying to blow it out. I don't know why it's trying to blow it out, but it is, and you just have to protect it. And just go, no. Or blow it out.
Thank you. I've moved around so much in my life, and every time that I have to move, whether it be the best apartment I ever had in Paris, or the best house in LA, or in Bali, the paradise. Every time I have to let it go and move on for one reason or another, usually because I can't afford it, it feels like my life is over. that I'm never going to have another house again, that I'm never going to have a place to live. I'm going to shave my head and become a Buddhist nun because there's absolutely nothing else for me. And it's so strong, the fear and the feeling of failure, and that I couldn't maintain this fantasy or this dream. And it's so strong, and it's not until I leave it and go on to whatever the scary next thing is that I never think of it again. Whatever's next opens up and is actually better for me at that time, even if it's more humble or whatever, but it's better, and it completely is gone. The other thing, and all the regret, and I don't know why that happens, but every single time, as soon as I leave it, I never think of the place again. And it's absolutely incredible, and I really believe this for you too, that's why I'm sharing it. Absolutely. And I also heard that the shrine is for sale, Rudy's shrine. And that is absolutely, I mean, amazing. I mean, I don't know if it's unaffordable or affordable. I would love to talk to you about it after
class. We are, there's a group of us who are talking about
that's
all of that.
That's amazing. And how it...
Well, it's actually been for sale for a long time. It hasn't had a price that was reasonable.
Right.
But it is something we're talking about. Let me say what you're saying is so important. I know because every time I go back to L.A. in the winter, I don't think about this place for a second. I forget it even exists. So here I am in this drama, you know. Like, how could I ever leave the thing that's
important?
I have
it every time. I have it every time in the house in L.A. I made a movie about how much I hated L.A., which isn't really about it, but it was really more about, it was a very short film. But it was very much about the idea of wherever you are is never good, and the other place, the fantasy, is always better.
Well, I mean, that is a problem for many people. Where they are either isn't where they should be, or it's the only place they should be.
Right.
But the truth is, there's no place that you are or can be that will ever last. It just will not last. Nothing is forever. And once you understand that, this process really starts to become meaningful to you, because most of us want this thing to be forever. And it's not. It can't be. Although, in the larger sense, it is forever, but it's not a steady state. It's an endless flow.
Everything has changed.
Everything has changed, and we hate change.
Rudy once said to one of his students, you know, we loved that ashram in the city. It was so full of energy. It was like you walk in there, and all of a sudden, like Kuan Yin, right? You walk in that room, it's like unbelievable. It was great. He once told one of the students, in a few years, when we're gone, they'll be urinating in the hallways here. That's what he told the students.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also temporary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Blanche is my rock in all of this, keeps saying we have this. It was wonderful. We've had 15 years here, and it's the most wonderful experience, and we've loved every second. I haven't loved every second, but I've come to love it in a way that I never imagined. And we really worked this place, and Blanche has more attachment on some level than I do, but she's freer of it than I am.
Think of all the Tibetan monasteries that were destroyed.
Absolutely.
And were there for hundreds and hundreds of years. Yeah.
It all comes and it all goes. And, you know, liberation is saying yes to that instead of no.